Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, Jackie Cation over here in my living room. No, it's my garage. Finally, Tom Papa is on the Dork Forest. Welcome to the Dork Forest, Tom Papa.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. It is true. It is T-O-M. P-A-P-A. That's how I would spell Tom Papa, and that's how he does. And you could find everything probably at TomPapa.com, but I just asked him a bunch of things, and that wasn't one of them. So let me tell you that he has a new book out, and it's called You're Doing Great and Other Reasons to Stay Alive. He has a SiriusXM show with Fortune Feimster called What a Joke. He's got a bread baking Instagram show, essentially, that he pushes to his YouTube called Breaking Bread? I get it.
Bread's the podcast.
That's the podcast.
Yeah, and then, Breaking Bread's the podcast. This is, I know, I've created all these things in fits and starts, and so they ended up with all these names.
Right.
There's the Breaking Bread podcast, which you people loved you on, by the way.
Oh, that was very nice of them. Yes.
And then I also have a YouTube channel where I actually teach people how to bake bread.
That'd be probably good, because I don't know how. Andy has started making soda bread, and we used to have a bread machine. Get this. Didn't work. I couldn't make the bread machine work, which is weird.
Which is good, because the bread machines aren't the best.
No, it's not. It doesn't have that je ne sais quoi.
Nah.
Anyway, Tom Papa, will you be discussing, is your dorkdom flour, water, salt, and whatever else goes in bread?
Yeast.
Yeast. Of
That's
course.
It. Otherwise, flour, water, salt, and yeast.
Otherwise, unleavened. My sister once That's gave right. me a book called Ratio, which is because I guess bread's all about ratios.
Yeah. A whole book on that?
Yeah. It just sort of talks about, like, you could make bread for one person or for a million people, but it's all just the same ratio.
Wow.
You would like that book.
Yeah, I would like that book. I know. I have so many books now. It's kind of insane.
How did it start? Like, what makes a person go, you know what I want to do? I want to get covered in flour and knead some flour.
Yeah. You know, I always cooked, but I never really was into baking bread like this. This was, and then I was writing on this TV show called Red Oaks, which was on Amazon.
Yeah.
And we would have, it wasn't a traditional writer's room. It was, we would go on these like retreats in this hotel, and we would all like pitch stories for a week or two and then split up. And there was this great guy, Max, who was one of the writers, And he, during one of our breaks, started talking about how he was baking sourdough bread and started explaining the sourdough starter, this living organism that creates the yeast, which is what you bake the bread from. And it just sounded like science fiction.
Yeah.
And I came home and told my family about it at dinner and just telling them how weird it was and sounded kind of cool, but weird. And then my daughter on the sly got a sourdough starter started for me.
Oh.
Which is just taking flour and water, equal parts, putting it in a bowl and letting the yeast that's flying around us enter the bowl and starts eating it. And then it starts to bubble and then you take a little off and you keep feeding it. And then you end up with this like kind of living blob. And she gave it to me for Christmas.
Aw, that and is then, adorable. Yes.
Yeah. So then from that, I baked my first loaf of bread at Max's directions.
Okay.
And it was amazing. It just...
I
kind of nailed it. It worked. He's a very scientific guy, and his mind is, you know, very thorough.
Yeah.
And he gave me very detailed directions, and it worked. And I had this like great bread right off the bat, and I was hooked. I really was hooked. His name is Max Werner, by the way.
Werner,
and
okay.
He's very funny and a really great writer. And I was like, wow, okay, this is pretty amazing. And then I just started going down into this rabbit hole. And it gave me so many things, not just the practice of making it, but actually I realized, like you said at the start, flour, water, salt, and yeast is the only thing that goes into bread. That's
right.
What bread is. Flour, water, salt, and yeast.
If you don't do salt, how does it work? How does it work out?
It works out pretty bland.
Okay. It just doesn't have any sort of depth. It's just pretty bland?
Yeah. It's like cardboardy in
taste.
And
it affects texture? Does it affect
the
texture at all?
Yeah, the texture, you know, they say that the salt really has like a chemical effect for the texture.
Okay.
But I have to say, like, I had this beautiful bread came out and I gave it to my friend and she was like, did you salt? There's nothing. So like the texture was fine, but it just tasted horrible. and now literally whenever I go to bake bread, I always have her picture in my mind of like, did you use salt?
It's my mother-in-law used to keep the salt and the sugar in the same color thing.
Oh.
And so the errors were that you can imagine were made on the regular. Until she made that error, like somebody else would come and cook and make the error. It was funny.
Yeah,
but
hilarious.
When she finally made the error, she was like, oh, I'm going to get a yellow one and a red one. And please do.
Problem solved. Yeah. It's amazing how you have these little things in your life. And it's like the fix is so easy, but you just don't do it. Just don't do it.
I just know which one is which. I was like, do you? Okay. So you used to cook just regular. Did you do any other baking or like a Nestle's Tall House cookie maybe? Or
no, my wife was into baking. She doesn't really cook. And
okay.
It's not really her thing, but she would always bake. Her mother was a really good baker and she would bake a lot. And I always considered baking not in my wheelhouse because it is very detail oriented and it's very precision oriented. And I'm not that way. Like I cook and just go by feel and, you know, approximate. And baking is always so rigid, but bread is kind of a bridge between the two. It has a little more artistic freedom in your measurements and what you're doing with it than
like cake
like strict
or
pastries or cakes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What makes it more like my thing with the bread machine, it was supposed to be idiot proof and yet nope. So I'd put it in and it wouldn't even mix right. But when Andy put stuff in, it turned into weird square bread with a hole in the middle.
Yeah, either way, the end result with that thing is not going to be the best. The thing is, there's a lot of feel. I think that's what cooking also lends itself to. There is things like you can, if you blow up the measurements and stuff, you will ruin it for sure. And the timing of it. But there's also, it's not rigid. It's not like the timing and the amounts will stay the same no matter what. It depends on your temperature. in your place.
Okay.
How active your starter is. If things are hot, warm, summer.
Yeah.
The yeast is a lot more active. Things happen a lot more quickly.
Okay.
It's opposite, of course, in the winter. And so you're kind of, you're in touch with it and you're feeling it and you're changing parameters
cool.
a little bit.
It's like you're actually living in the moment. Because you have to be aware of the temperature and the humidity
I
know there's something with altitude too, isn't there? Or
yes, very
how
good.
How long?
Exactly. Cooking? Yeah, it's all of these factors kind of come into play. So, you know, if someone gives you a recipe and they're baking it and writing it down from Colorado in the middle of the winter and you're in Southern California, there's going to be a little tweak.
Okay, you know? What is that?
And also how active your starter is, how active the yeast is. That's going to change too.
Where do you keep the yeast when you're not taking from it or adding to it?
There's two of them. One is originally from Max, and one is the one my daughter created.
Aww.
And they both have their separate mason jars.
Okay.
And they are in the refrigerator.
Okay, refrigerated.
Because you have to feed it. You have to feed it flour and water to keep it alive.
Okay.
So,
but
if you
don't
put it in the
refrigerator, you don't have to air it out anymore. It's all just in the thing now.
Yeah, it'll be okay. Once you take it out and you put it in a bowl and have it on the counter, it's really active. It's going to be eating up all of the flour and the water, and it's going to be really active. And it's going to be eating it, digesting it, and if you don't keep feeding it, it starves essentially, and then dies.
Dies off?
Yeah. So
okay.
If you put it in the refrigerator, it slows down the fermentation. So you'd only have to feed it like once every week and a half.
And how often are you making bread? You brought me a loaf of bread when we did your podcast, and it was delicious. And it was wheat flour and I think white flour together.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It was probably 75% wheat.
Okay. So
how was it? What did you do with it?
Well, we did many things with it, including eggs in a basket and just toasting it and having some peanut butter and then toasting it and having some jelly.
Ooh,
and then like it was a big loaf of bread, too. And there's just the two of us. And then the last two sort of because it was round, we had two triangle crusts left.
Uh-huh.
And so I made lentil soup and we used it for sopping up.
Oh, nice.
We were pretty psyched
I love hearing
about
that.
It.
Yeah, I love hearing that. That's great. I bake a lot. I bake probably twice a week.
Okay.
It's kind of a 3-day process. So
how
it's
so?
Well, because if you want to bake bread, you decide you're going to bake it. You have to take the starter out of the refrigerator and at first you have to feed it. You're not going to be baking bread that day.
Oh, you can't just take the starter out, grab some and put it in your dough?
And put in your dough, no. No, because it's slowed down, it's a little heavy, and it's not very active right now.
I think this is why I've killed all the sourdough starter that's ever been given to me. Okay, so you take it out.
I go through this all the time.
Okay.
I just went through this with my cousin. They called me in a panic. They're like, we're throwing the starter in. Why isn't it working? All right, slow down. You have to take it out, and you have to activate the yeast, basically. So it's laying in this dormant, sleepy condition in the refrigerator, and you take it out and you take like a big tablespoon of it, put in a little bowl,
okay,
and then you feed it flour and water like we did before, but now it's out, it's at room temperature,
so you put the rest of it back in.
This
big spoonful with flour and water. Okay,
right, exactly. So then it gets a little active, you know, it in probably maybe like kind of doubles in size, but it's still a little heavy, it's still a little thick. You throw all of that out except for one tablespoon. You dump it down the sink. And then you put more flour and water in equal parts. And when you're getting to the part about baking, and if your starter's pretty active, it'll take only two feedings. Sometimes it's three. But usually at two, I get away with it. On that second feeding, it becomes super active, and now it's like tripled in size, and it's light and airy. It's got a little bubbles on top, and it's this light, airy thing.
Huh.
And there's a thing called the float test. If you want to test if your starter's ready to bake, you take a little piece of a tablespoon of it, put it in some water, and if it floats, you know it's light and airy enough, it's going to be active enough to be put in with flour and water and make a bread.
Wow.
So this is a day. So this is like a day, day and a half we're already in, right? Because we've taken it out and you're feeding it. And now you've got this thing that's active. Now you can mix your dough.
Okay.
So now you take about 1,000 grams of flour. This is for 2 loaves.
Okay.
About 1,000 grams of flour. And then you mix that in with water, like 750 grams would be 75% hydration.
Okay.
Which, so like the bread I gave you is pretty like airy in between.
Yeah.
It's not like super dense.
Nope.
75% is about that. You can go up to like 85%. It gets really airy. So you add the water and the flour, mix that up, and then you let it sit for about a half an hour. This is a process called autolyse.
How do you spell autolyse?
Auto.
Auto.
L-Y-S-E.
L-Y-S-E. Okay.
Yeah. And that really lets the flour soak up all the water. It gets, it's all soaked in and it'll start to expand a little bit. And then you add your starter.
Wow. Okay.
Starter. A little more water and salt.
And that's when the salt goes in.
That's when the salt comes in, about 2 tablespoons of salt.
For two loaves of bread. Okay.
It's going to be about 2 loaves.
Okay.
So then you mix all that together in your little starter bowl, and then you pour that, you marry it with the flour you mixed earlier with the flour and water, and now you've got a dough. You mix it all up with your hands, and it's this globby dough. This is a no-knead process, so you're not going to knead this bread.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So here's... Okay, so here... this is all guesswork. I take my 2 cups because I work in cups, not grams, I'm afraid. So I take my 2 cups flat of a flour, and then I take equal part or 85% of that in water, and I just let it sit. I don't stir it.
You do stir it.
You
mix
stir
it all
up,
together.
You mix it all together, but you don't knead it into a ball or into a goo. You just sort
get
of
it
just
all
stir it.
Soaked it up. Yeah.
And then just let it sit for a bit so it soaks the rest of the way up.
Yeah.
And then you add the starter. And then
after a half hour.
And the salt.
Now, if we may go back.
Yes.
Why are you against grams?
Math. Just raised. I was raised incorrectly. No, I don't know.
I'm horrible with math. And you got to get a digital scale.
Okay.
And you need to weigh it out because your 2 cups,
yeah, flat
can be dense. You could stuff that down. It's flour,
right?
It's pretty deceptive on what that is. So yeah, they say that you should weigh it out, a little digital scale.
Okay,
I recommend it.
Now, okay, so let's finish these 2 loaves of bread, and then I have many questions.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we're still in day 2, and we've mixed it all together.
Right.
And we've taken it out of this big jug, and we put it into a little slightly smaller jug, about 4 liters. And this is a stretch and fold method. Rather than kneading it, taking it out and beating it up and doing that method.
Yeah.
This is no knead bread, where you grab a little piece of it. It's all sitting there in the bottom, in the half of the tub.
Right.
And you reach in and you stretch it up on itself and fold it. Turn it, stretch it up on itself and fold
leaving
it.
It
and
in
you
the bowl.
Feel it. You feel it forming the gluten. It's getting tighter. It's getting tighter, and then leave it. And you do that about 4 times over about 4 hours. Very simple process. You roll in like in. I was doing it this morning.
Right.
I had my radio show, and then at a break, I walked in, I stretch and fold, let it sit for a little longer. 4 hours later, I'm ready to shape the bread.
Okay.
You dump that out on the counter.
At no time are you taking it out of the tub that you have mixed it all in. You're just lifting, folding, lifting, folding a little bit of that every couple every hour for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Just so you can feel the gluten make.
Yeah, well, it's actually helping. It's actually creating the gluten. It's actually creating those strands that is making it. And you'll feel it, like, you as you're stretching and folding. By the time you're around the bread on the fourth time, it's a little hard to stretch it. It's not.
Yeah.
The first one will be like pretty large, and then the last one's like pretty tight. And then you've proofed it. It's been proofing for 4 hours, and it'll have probably doubled in size. And it has structure to it. And that's what you want. You want it to be able to hold itself together to make bread. And you want it to have fermented. And you dump it out on the counter. And now you're into shaping.
Right.
Now you're going to shape this big glob into two loaves. So you throw it on the counter. You take your bread knife. And you mix it into two pieces. And this is a process that's hard to kind of describe, but you basically pull it on itself and it starts to form this top. You basically have a top to the bread and you keep pulling it and it becomes this tight little ball.
Oh, wait. You're smoothing it from the top underneath. Smoothing it from the top underneath.
Yeah.
I've seen it done on the Great British Bake Off. I've seen it.
Right.
Like, and then then there's some rotation happening sometimes.
Yeah, you kind of like pull it towards you. There's a lot of different slight variations in that shaping process.
Sure.
Some people just do it with a knife. Some people do the thing. You find what works for you. And then you leave that for about 20 minutes. And if it's been, there's a lot of variations to all this, but if it's been overproofed, that ball will flatten pretty quickly. Like within 5 minutes, it's kind of like a flat pancake. If it's proofed correctly, over 20 minutes, it'll get kind of a flattish. And that's really what you want. You don't want it loose. That's not going to shape very well. It's not going to hold.
If it flattens out, do you have to start over?
No, there's no really going back. You can shape it again, and sometimes that does help give it a little more structure. But once you've overproofed it, like if I did that the other night, and I left it for 5 hours in its thing, like four is the limit. This one, like five and a half hours, it's big. It's like it looks big and fluffy.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, but it doesn't hold its shape, and the breads come out. Or they're ultimately going to be pretty flat.
Okay.
So now we've shaped it.
Yeah.
And then you shape it after 20 minutes, you shape it again. And this is more like kind of like an envelope. You flip it on its back and you pull the outside of this roundish shape in on itself, flip it over, and now you've got a tighter ball that's a little more, it's like you've shaped it a second time, and you take that and you put it in your basket. In your Benetton, in your little bread basket.
There's a bread basket.
There's
a
bread basket.
Is it made of wicker? Is it creepily made of wicker?
It's not the wicker that creeps you out, really.
Okay.
But it's not a wicker that would make you comfortable either.
No, I'm not comfortable with wicker for some reason. I have no idea why. I have a visceral reaction to wicker.
But what do you know that about
you? Why is it in a basket? Why is it not on
because
a pan to bake it? No?
Because we're only in day two, Jackie.
Oh, that's right. Oh my God, that's right. It's a 3-day. Wow.
Yeah.
Do bakeries do all of this? Is that why?
Yes.
Bakery bread is so amazing.
That's yes.
Why. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And it's, and look, it's a 3-day thing. Like if you were to start for your first time, it's going to seem like this arduous process that's very lengthy, and but once you're into the groove, it's like, you know, things are fermenting, things are being shaped, things are in the fridge proofing, things are being baked. You're kind of in the rhythm of something. There's a stage always going on.
Fair enough. Okay.
Right.
Yep.
So you take these now in these baskets. You put them in the basket. You can let them sit out on the counter for an hour and let them proof rise a little bit more.
Are things covered? Do things have
I use
like
this cloth,
tea
like
towel
a,
or?
Yeah, exactly. I have like this burlappy towel that has this funny coffee thing picture on it.
Oh.
I throw that over. But here's a little funny thing. When you go to, now what you're going to do with this is now put it in the refrigerator overnight.
Okay.
That is going to
slow it down, won't it?
Be its final proof. It's going to slow it down.
Right.
It's not going to like expand like it would if we left it on the counter, but it's going to still be fermenting, and it's going to make the flavors deeper And it's also going to make it easier to manage. It actually becomes a firmer loaf. So when we go to this next stage, you'll see why in a minute. You want to be able to handle it. When it's loosey-goosey, you can blow it at this next stage.
Okay.
So a little trick that a friend of mine gave me, shower caps.
Oh.
You take a shower cap.
You just have
and you
to
put
find
that
out-
over your basket. And that's your little covering when you put it in the refrigerator.
In the fridge. So cloth, okay, on the counter. Once in the fridge, put a nice little shower cap. Matter of fact, I think that the Reynolds Wrap cling film people are making shower cap for – they're making shower caps for food now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because that allows you when it's on the counter, you're covering in a towel – it's you've got them two together now. If you've individually wrapped them, you can put them on separate shelves in the fridge, and that's where it will sit overnight. And the longer you keep it in, the richer, the deeper the flavors are. Usually, the schedule that I'm on now is that I just took bread out of the oven, but I also have bread that's in the works that was just in the stage of it hasn't been shaped yet. It's still rising.
Oh, okay.
That will be done today around 6 o'clock.
Okay.
That'll go in the refrigerator. And then that'll come out and I will bake it anywhere between 8 in the morning to like 12, 1, 2 o'clock. It's no hard, steadfast rule.
Can you leave it in the fridge too long?
You can. It will eventually, same as the starter, start to harden up and it'll be over fermented and it'll start to die. But a really interesting thing is sometimes I've screwed up and forgotten for a long time, like a full day. It was like, come running home. Oh, there's bread and I totally forgot about it. It's surprising how deep the flavor is. It's like, it actually makes it better. There's like a tipping point, which I'm not sure when that would be.
Right,
but it can
just be more flavorful or just more. That's interesting because it's it feels like quite a commitment, this bread making business with a 3-day
process.
We're
not even at day three.
We're still at day two. Oh, that's right, because you just put it in the fridge.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is crazy. So now it's 8 o'clock.
So the commitment continues. Yeah. So this is like having a pet.
This is why you're married and have children for so long. Well done,
it's
sir.
True. Yeah, because it has. Yeah, you're thinking ahead. It's always organizing. It's always thinking of like what's going to happen. That you know, and then the next day you take it out of those. You take these two Dutch ovens. These cast iron Dutch ovens with a lid.
Oh, okay.
Put those in the oven, crank it up to 500 degrees, let it heat up.
Wait, you put it in cold and then turn the heat on? Or do you preheat?
The Dutch ovens.
Yeah.
The bread's still in the fridge.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're just hotting up the Dutch ovens.
Yeah.
Okay.
They get up to 500 degrees.
Yeah.
You take these out and you are going to transfer them now from the baskets into the Dutch ovens that are now 500 degrees. So this is why you want it to be firm. This is why being in the fridge is your friend, because you're going to turn it out. I could actually hold it in your hand and put it delicately into the Dutch oven without burning yourself.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. And then you take a razor, you slash whatever design you want on the top because it's going to let air out.
Okay.
You spray water in there for steam, put the lid on it, shove it in the oven for 20 minutes. Take the lid off, lower it to 450, another 15 minutes. Take the bread out of the Dutch oven, put it in there to brown at the final stage for about 12 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
And now you have bread. Exhausting, right?
Exhausting. Holy smokes. That's why. Okay.
And that's what I did for you.
And that is what you did for me. You made me a wheat bread. What are the ones, because, so I have many questions about the kinds of breads that can happen.
Okay.
Are there, do you make like two or three of the sort of the, your go-tos, or is it just that wheat bread that you do?
Slight variations of that bread is like my main thing. It's like a country loaf, and you can vary the wheat. The wheat is really the key. Like and when I started, I was just using King Arthur flour, just white flour from the supermarket. Great flour. It's an awesome flour, an awesome company. But it gives you a certain kind of regular bread, which is, you know, all bread is great.
Yeah.
But then I started looking into these different flours. I started, when I would go on the road and I would check on Instagram, I started looking at these bakeries that were, these artisan bakeries that were making amazing bread. And I started checking what flour they were using.
Right.
And there's a couple great bakeries in LA and this woman, Kate, up in Ojai. And they were all using flour from Central Milling, which is up in Northern California.
Okay.
And I started ordering the I started ordering the same flour for myself.
And do you see a difference?
Oh yeah, a huge difference.
Interesting.
And there's a ton of different flours out there. There's a place in Pasadena called Grist and Toll. All these places are getting back to using wheat that was grown in a smaller farm environment that was native to that state, you know. So there was a point where with all food where they started just mass producing stuff and thought that we just have to feed all of these people, and they kind of destroyed smaller farms and smaller butcheries.
Right, they thought that they were going to get rid of famine. Right.
Which, kind of a good intent.
A great intent, and kind of worked. You know, it didn't get rid of all of it, but there's crap food for everyone now.
For everyone. And God bless it, because I always think about, at lunchtime, think about 7 billion people walking around looking for something to eat. Like, that's what it is.
That's what it is. Yeah.
But when you slow down and live within your community,
right,
and maybe you don't need to let them feed, you know, the masses that way, that, you know, are hustling and whatever, and you need to be fed that way, you can actually support and be doing something good for the environment and for the local economy by having that farmer grow that wheat the way they used to, and supplying it with this miller who's making it into flour, and then you make it into your bread. And that's a very simple chain. But
The big problem was addressed. But now we can take parts of the problem that that big problem created and sort of peel it off and go, okay, so if we can do that on a large scale, let's do that in a million tiny scales where it's healthier and better for you and more local, right?
Right, exactly. And the thing you have to do, though, is you don't have to do it, and I don't have to do it, but they have to figure out how do they make it profitable for the farmer, everyone along that little chain.
Can they still make money? Yeah, everyone has to make a living. But I think with the big farms for a minute, and I don't know, like I know that they've branched out and done other things, but I think that their profit margin was so great that it wasn't just let's make a living. It's let's make a gratuitous profit, where if everyone just sort of made enough to live on, and then, you know, you're going to want a bass boat. Everybody's going to want, you know, or a snowmobile. But the thing is,
you want your extras.
Yeah, everybody wants at least one extra in their life,
But what they started to do is in that vein, when they wanted so many bass boats, is that they start wiping out these small farmers.
Right.
And there's even things like Monsanto. Yeah. Like they actually want to like trademark every seed. They want ownership over everything. So even if this small farmer goes and makes this heritage wheat, they can sweep in and say, that's our wheat. It's like, no, kind of nature made this.
Yeah, there's a reason this planet would like us to die. Because we're super bossy as a species.
So bossy.
The bossiest of all species.
But on a small level, like the thing that really turned me on about the bread, not just the process of doing it and having like this little fun little hobby, was, you know, the bread I was getting for my family in a supermarket which I thought was good bread that seemed like the crunchiest, wheatiest bread that you could get, with the little wooden sign and the logo and all of it, had 32 ingredients in it. And you learn that they actually, the FDA actually had to change the definition of what bread was in enable to rule and regulate the this bread product that was coming at us. But that's not really bread. This isn't even really bread. Flour, water, salt, and yeast, that's bread.
That's bread. And everything that you... So I was going to ask you about flavored breads and savory breads and sweet breads, not brains, just a bread that you put like a cranberry in. I don't know. But what banana bread. Do you ever, have you ever... do you add like rose... Do you make a rosemary loaf?
Yeah, there's... I have to say, and I've been at it for a pretty long time, but I...
How
haven't
long?
Gotten too adventurous. Probably like 6 years.
Okay.
And I make this amazing olive loaf.
Yeah.
Which I was going to make for you actually and didn't have the ingredients, but a black olive and a Kalamata olive, lemon zest, and herbs de Provence.
Yeah.
And walnuts if you want to go really crazy. That olive loaf is insanely good. It's amazingly good. I make that. I make bagels.
Okay.
Sesame and poppy seed bagels, which is like, it's a variation off
of the same process. If you want to make Andy Ashcraft a poppy seed bagel, he would probably insert dirty joke. he freaking loves a poppy seed. How do you make bagels? Is that a 3-day process?
It's not. It's a shorter process.
Okay.
Because you're still, I had a hard time finding good bagels out here in LA.
Western bagels, the best of the lot. And it's just, I mean, if you can get a better bagel than Western Bagel, you win.
Yeah. Which I did find, by the way.
Oh, you did?
There's Bell's Bagels.
Thank you.
Bell's Bagels.
Okay.
It's over in, I think it's Hancock Park. I always get confused with those neighborhoods.
Right.
But Bell's Bagels in LA. And there's this great baker, Bub and Grandma's, who supplies a lot of the bread to all of the restaurants when restaurants were open in Los Angeles. And he's just this guy, Andy, amazing baker, amazing breads. And he was connected with Bell's Bagels somehow. So I was like, oh, this has got to be good. And they're good. They're so good. Oh man, they're good. But before I found Bell's, I couldn't find any. And I was looking at one of my books. I started, getting obsessed with this. So I started following accounts and going online and ordering every great bread book I could find.
Sure.
And I found a recipe for bagels. I was like, ooh, let me give that a shot. And using the sourdough starter as the yeast for those bagels, again, the flavor.
Right.
I was like, I couldn't believe I had made something close to the East Coast bagel that I loved.
Yeah.
And it was in my own kitchen. I was so excited.
Did you find that in one of the books, that recipe?
Yeah.
Do you know what book offhand or?
No, it's a French name. I'd have to look it up. It's over there in the pile.
And what you should know is that my mother-in-law, Chris Foley, makes a hell of an English muffin.
Ooh, I've heard that. I've heard that, not about her, but I've heard that making an English muffin is a really satisfying endeavor.
It's a satisfying, it took her probably a good year and a half to nail it.
Yeah.
And now she does, and they're sourdough, and she's had the same mother, the same sourdough starter for decades. I've killed the mother. She's shared it with us.
Her offspring.
It is, she makes I like a Thomas English muffin occasionally, but.
That's kind of the only commercial bread I buy now. I just bought it yesterday, was a Thomas's English muffin.
Yeah, but her English muffins are so much better. And she also has a weird tool. Yeah. She has a squishy tool that you put in.
Uh-huh.
And you press it, and it's got like forks on it that when you press it, it brings it up so you can see all those cool holes.
Oh, man.
So if you cut an English muffin with a knife, you just sort of have bread and not really the holes that holds all of the butter, that you wish to put on an English muffin or cream or whatever, cream cheese or whatever the hell.
Do you like the cinnamon raisin English muffin?
I don't. I don't like a cinnamon raisin almost anything. Raisins, I think, are my downfall. But Andy really likes, he likes fruit with meat. Here, oh, I was going to tell you this. If you ever make a rosemary loaf.
Yeah.
And then you want to make chicken to the gods, that chicken recipe that I told you about. The basic chicken recipe, salt, pepper, garlic, a little bit of butter maybe if you want to crisp up the skin. If you take that rosemary loaf, do a rough chop or rough rip on it, put it underneath the chicken, and bake the chicken on top of it, you get something called chicken bread. In my parlance, and it is, all it is chicken schmaltz. It's chicken fat that is soaked into the greatest bread in the world, and then you try not to eat all of it.
That's amazing. Holy cow, I'm definitely going to try that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a cool thing, like you can, off of that basic loaf that I was describing, you can kind of add anything you want. Like, you could just add rosemary to it. Yeah. You could add cheese and jalapeno.
When do
is
you
a
add
great
it?
Variation.
Do you add
in that stretch and fold after you've mixed it all together and you're going to start stretching and folding that first time or two, start adding all those ingredients.
Okay, stretch, fold, add.
Throw
weight.
Some stuff. Yeah.
And then no, come just, back.
Yeah.
Stretch, fold, maybe add a little bit more weight.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, you can't, during that whole process, you're going to be fine because that stuff doesn't really have to do too much. The one thing you have to keep in mind with that is a lot of these ingredients have moisture. So if you're adding olives, if you're adding cheese, you don't need as much water in your bread.
Oh.
But these are like smaller moves.
Yeah, yeah. That's the lovely minutiae that I love.
I started getting into rye breads.
Okay.
Which
using
are
a rye flour, then I assume.
Yep, exactly. Which is a weird flour. it's a weird, dense, gooey, mud-like flour.
Yeah.
Which it speaks to the German side of me. There's like
sure.
one part of, and I and those you put like fennel seed and caraway seed, and man, those the flavors that come out of that are so rich. Rye is powerful. Like if you even just add like 10% rye flour to this country loaf, it'll just add all this flavor. So it becomes this whole tweaking thing. You just start to explore the different flours and the different things you can add to it. And you kind of get good at it and you can like add them to your roster.
Okay. So first of all, allow me to remind everyone, I'm talking to Tom Papa. That's and you're going to want to follow Tom Papa on all the Tom Papa things that you can follow him on, which is at Tom Papa for the things. And then he's got a new book called You're Doing Great and Other Reasons to Stay Alive. Got a show on Sirius XM called What a Joke. Got a podcast called Breaking Bread and a YouTube channel, which is the Tom Papa YouTube channel, which will have many things like how to make bread. But speaking of that book, is
yes.
the... Is it fiction? No.
Sometimes. Lately.
It's well, I think because I was thinking about a terrible series, and I'm hoping she's better now. But there are these things called cozy mysteries. Have you heard of the cozy mystery?
No.
Oh, it's a terrible, terrible idea. There's murder, but it's sort of like they've taken the sort of the Agatha Christie or the Angela Lansbury TV show. And they liked the cute part of it.
Yeah.
And so they turned it into a kind of a book where someone's murdered. There's been some sort of horrible crime. But
why bother?
There's also something else going on. And there's a woman from northern Minnesota. And I read probably three of her books. You would have thought I would have stopped at one, but I was like, maybe it's a fluke because her name is Joanna Fluke. it's a fluke that she was published initially because there are these cozy mysteries and like they're called like the blueberry mini muffin murder mystery or something.
Yeah.
And every chapter has a recipe.
Of course.
And
in all of the books?
In all of the books that I read, it was recipe because it's she's in some tiny town in northern Minnesota. you know, like near Brainerd, where there's they start their cars from the outside. I have no idea. There's trouble. It's up in the Iron Range, and but the premise of the one that I remember the most was a blueberry muffin murder mystery, and it was there's a woman named Tina Cation who also writes. They're called the Kebab Murder Mystery, and they're all Middle Eastern. Like one is.
Are these popular?
It's like the cozy mysteries are hugely popular. Is what I'm saying is that you could write them. There could be recipes, and they might. And because you're a comic, I think there's a better chance of you being good at it. Like,
right?
I don't know if you know Tess Rafferty. Used to do stand-up, is a comedy writer now, used to do stand-up comedy. She has published her first murder mystery, and all murder mysteries now got to have a hook, and hers does. Yeah. It's called Under the Tuscan Gun, and it's set in Tuscany, Italy. And
hilarious.
And it's actually, it's lightly written and lightly funny. But like the Joanna Fluke murder mystery thing, the main character, as far as I remember, was a baker who neither solved the crime nor was a victim of the crime. She just lived in the town, and she was our narrator. And
she just happens to be baking and hearing about this news in the town.
Yeah, because I don't even remember what the crime was. I remember the recipes, and I remember.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's a lot. Would you ever – do you – what do you think of the likelihood of people who bake bread to be murderers?
Oh, very low.
Very low.
Very low, but if they did do it, they'd be good at it because they're kind of loners. And they're methodical and they think things out. And I think there'd probably be some fermentation involved. I think, but I have to say, I did this show on the Food Network where I traveled around the country talking to bakers. And in all these different cities. And
what?
Very few people open up a shop in a town to make cakes and cookies for people. Very few of those people are assholes. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're not. That's a long con to go to do bake sales and make kids happy and birthdays and graduations and then start killing people.
That is the longest con. Actually think bakers are people pleasers of the most specific type, now that you've made me think of it. Because they're like, I am going to spend 3 days making a loaf of bread that you are going to love.
I know. It's really true. And that's what I've been doing during this whole pandemic. I've been just making bread because I make 4 loaves a week.
Yeah.
And I live with my wife and my 2 daughters, and it's, you know, there's only so much bread you can eat.
It's true.
So I just started delivering it to all of our comedian friends.
Right, right.
And you know, I gave some to Lori. I gave some to everybody I know. I just get my cars when there's no traffic, especially in the early part of this when there was like nobody on the road and you couldn't leave your house.
Yeah.
I just get in the car and go drive to Ali Wong's house. And deliver bread through the the vestibule.
Just there you go. Yeah, right. It's Bamford. You should give one to Bamford.
Yeah, I should. She's been away.
She's been away. She's back now. And
I want to talk to her too because we got a pug.
Oh, there you go. Sure. Yeah. She's running a hospice for aging pugs. She keeps adopting these very, very old animals and makes their last months kind of the greatest months of their lives.
It shows what an angel she is. That you would bring an animal into your house and its last months.
On its last legs. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the thing is I don't think she started doing it on purpose. She just was drawn to the most damaged dog possible. And it was always just a very old pug chihuahua mix just a pug. And so
maybe I'll give her a bread and get some pug tips.
Pug tips. Yeah, she's got pug tips for you for sure. And
that sounds like something you would get in a restaurant. You want to get some pug tips for the table?
Pug tips, yeah. Have you ever heard Ian Carmel's pancakes for the table bit?
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, he's right. Nobody should eat because there's only so much bread you can really eat. And
yeah, So I've just been delivering it and bringing it to people, and it does make them happy, and I enjoy that it makes them happy. And I know they're not getting bread like this in their day-to-day life. And it's been a nice way for me to like see comics who we don't get to see like in the clubs anymore. And but I have to say, as much as I love it, meeting all these bakers and stuff, that life is hard. Like though, like I until I started like meeting these people, I would just roll into a bakery or a coffee shop and see a counter, a big case filled with pastries and breads and muffins and all of it, and just like, oh, like it's always been there.
Yeah.
And then you realize when you talk to these people, there was someone in that shop around the clock, 24 hours a day, at 2 o'clock in the morning, someone's at one stage of that baked item. So that case is filled up at 7 o'clock in the morning for when you roll in.
And then when
it's
they run out.
Hard work.
I will say this, is I went to a coffee shop just because occasionally I like to get a cup of coffee that I didn't make.
Yeah.
Even in quarantine. So
yeah, I know.
I go to this coffee shop and, you know, they've got it spaced out and it's all contactless and it's good. But I was like, hey, do you guys have any food? And they said, yeah, we had a pastry thing full of pastries, but they've all sold out. And I remember feeling irritated, but then exactly I thought to myself, oh, well, somebody made a lot of pastries and probably have had to either lower production because of turnover.
How many people are coming? Yeah.
Right. Or they've had to pick up production because more people are like desperately, give me something.
Yeah, I know. You get irritated. You're like, what do you mean? There should always be pastry for me. What do you mean run out? Who runs out?
Right. This is America. What happened?
Yeah. And,
but I suppose that is now, why did you – I do want to ask one more thing about the bread, is that why – do you always make no-knead bread?
Yeah, well –
did you ever try kneaded?
It depends because like a challah bread that I need –
that's
you
a braided
it.
Bread, isn't it? Isn't
that's
there
a braided
plant?
Bread with sugar and egg in it. Mm. It's Jewish bread.
Yeah, yeah.
For that bread, you
Friday
need
night services or something.
Yeah,
right?
The bagels you need. Oh, you know what else? Pretzels. Ooh.
You make
which
pretzels?
which my daughter has put a request in recently.
Oh, okay,
that's
how do you
a fun
make pretzels?
One. And that happens. That's not that long. That probably takes like an hour or two. And you can have like homemade pretzels in your house.
But you still have to let that the stuff sit on the counter for a day, right?
Yes.
Because it's got to ferment.
That still
and
has to be
thing.
Active and ready to go. Yeah, for sure.
So do you always have a little bit of that on the counter just in case you want to make pretzels or something quick?
Yeah, there's usually some on the counter that's being fed. That's, while the other two are sitting in the refrigerator. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if an unfed, like if you get to a point where you have that little bowl out on the counter and you haven't fed it in a day, and it's either I have to feed it or it's got to go down the drain.
Okay.
Or another option is you take a cup of that unfed starter and you add a cup of buttermilk, a cup of brown sugar, and a cup of flour, and mix that all together in a bowl and let that sponge, it's called the sponge, let that sit overnight. And in the morning, wake up and you add an egg to it and some vanilla and some baking soda, and you're making waffles.
Oh. Wow.
Sourdough waffles. Yeah.
Andy makes waffles.
Off the hook.
Yeah. But he makes waffles. He makes them morning of, and it's not, he must use yeast or baking soda or something. But but he likes to use different kinds of flour, interesting flour, like chickpea flour. He likes to put a little either chickpea or arrowroot. Mm-hmm. He likes to mix it up with weirdo flours made out of non-grains.
Oh, interesting. How are they?
They're great. He makes a hell of a waffle. I don't need
waffles
a lot of waffles.
Are good.
Yeah, waffles
I know.
Are good.
You can't eat those that often.
Great. How many waffles can you eat?
That's a special occasion.
So you have both mothers. You have the one from Max, and then you have the one that your daughter made.
Yeah.
And This is just made from dirt in the air, as far as I can tell.
Pretty much.
And that's where I sort of bulk. And then I go, what do you, how much dirt do you, are you already eating? Calm down. Yeah. Anyway, so do those, when you make, if you were to make two breads with each of those mothers, how different are those flavors? Because they're both sourdough, right?
They're kind of different. Yeah. It's interesting. The one that my daughter got started is a lot more active, which it shouldn't be because it's mostly white flour. It was a white flour based starter.
Do you have and to keep doing a lot of white times flour?
Wheat is a little more active.
Okay.
So, but for some reason hers is, it's really active. Like you could feed that once and be able to bake bread off of it. The other one needs a couple, but the other one's maxes a little more, creates a little bit more of an earthy flavor to it.
How do you know what? Because you said you feed it and then you might have to feed it again for it to be ready to make to use in bread. How do you know that it's ready to use in bread? That it's doubled or?
Yeah, you could tell that it's like you want to get it at its peak, so it starts bubbling and it gets bigger in size and it becomes very like cloud like. Bubbles, like big bubbles.
Oh, okay.
And, if you like kind of take that little bowl and kind of like knock it on the table for a second and it doesn't completely flatten, then it's really ready to go because it's all big and bubbly, but it's still kind of strong. Then it starts to, if you leave it, it just starts to go down. But again, that's the float test. That's a good way to kind of get your...
Oh, that's right. Then you take a little piece off and you put it just in cold water, did you say? What was it?
Yeah, any water.
Any water just to see if it floats.
Yeah.
And how much are you using in the bread? Like if you have so many grams and so many liters, how much...
It's about... It's about 200 to 360 grams of starter.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's about like 2.5 cups.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's your yeast, that's your flavor, and it also has water to it.
All right. Fascinating.
Yeah. Then you're making bread, baby.
Then you're making bread.
You're making bread. You're giving it to all the people.
And why wouldn't you?
And I have to say, the cool thing about it, now or when I'm writing a lot, like when I'm writing the books, you know, every half hour, 40 minutes or so, you get up to stretch and get some water or whatever. That's when you go and do whatever step there is for the bread. It kind of lends itself to a writer's kind of rhythm.
Right, because you're not supposed to, like, you're supposed to take a break every 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah, you're supposed to get up, stretch your legs, walk away from it for a second, and the bread. So you just kind of go in and you do this next step, and then it doesn't become like, I know the process seems like this big, long, daunting thing, but it actually just fits into the rhythm of a day. It's pretty nice that way.
Interesting. That is kind of cool because I know that like I'm in this garage for like 6 hours a day now and it can be a bit of a drag. And I have the curtains closed so that the sound is a little bit better, but it is nice when I can open the curtains and let the sun in and I can see the garden and stuff. So
I know I closed my blinds for the radio show because we were on like this.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's something about having the, when we're not working and you have like a day off and those blinds are just open.
The light.
The light. Yeah. No, this is like living in New Jersey.
Right. Right. I don't need to live in Alaska right now.
It's right, exactly.
So brutal.
It's, yeah. But like I tell people, you know, if I've never had a hobby before and if you are going to get a hobby, it might as well be one that you can eat.
Fair enough. Yeah, my hobby has been this vegetable garden, and and I've had it for, I would say, since 2004. Mm-hmm. I've always called it a victory garden because we've always been at war, and but I've done it because garden tomatoes are my downfall. They aren't, you know, it turns out they're not the greatest thing for you to eat a lot of. Because they're so acidic,
right?
That tomatoes. But for 2 months, I eat hundreds of tomato sandwiches.
Oh man,
yeah,
that's great.
Because
there's nothing better.
Need to there's nothing better. And I with homemade bread.
Oh, yeah. There's a recipe in Tartine's book. Tartine is this big revolutionary bread company out of San Francisco.
Right.
And what's it called? I think it's just called pan de tomato. And it's just bread and tomato. And you basically take this bread, put it in a skillet, and toast it with olive oil.
Yeah.
And then you take a tomato, your ripe, beautiful tomato, and with the skin still on, just start rubbing it on the toasted bread and let the tomato start to soak in fragments of it and the juice. Put a little piece of prosciutto on the top of that. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my Lord. As I fall off screen.
We'll do that next summer.
Yes, please. And Tom Papa, this has been a delight. We are, I believe, at an hour. God knows. But I want to tell people one more time, and thank you so much for doing the show.
Glad Tom Papa, finally do it.
Yeah, exactly. It took long enough. It's at Tom Papa and SiriusXM show What a Joke. And that's daily, right? That's 5 days a week or more.
Yeah, it's 5 days a week.
Yeah, and
Monday
Breaking
through
Bread.
Friday.
Is your podcast I was just on. Yes. And the Tom Papa YouTube channel has a lot of great videos on it. And his stand-up is a delight as well. You might want to look into listening to some albums because there's a bit in it.
The real thing that I do. I've turned into a baker now.
Right. The one man
I was
band
a comedian.
That we all are. And get the new book, which is You're Doing Great and Other Reasons to Stay Alive, which sounds like a really good idea right now. So thank you so much for being on the show. And
the
Rangers,
best.
You know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?